And welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast. We are committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, inspirational people on the planet directly to your earbuds. And today, I have a guest that I have been looking forward to interview for a long time. I read both her books and was deeply impacted by the first book, which really tells the story of how Yeonmi Park escapes from North Korea via China. Then she ends up going through the Gobi Desert to Mongolia, from Mongolia to South Korea, from South Korea to America. It's a fascinating story. And she has two poignant purposes in her life. The first poignant purpose is that she wants people to know that North Korea is the world's largest concentration camp. As a human rights activist, she wants people to understand just how terrifying the situation in North Korea, facilitated by China, really is. And secondly, she wants us to understand how fragile our freedom in America is. And she does the most wonderful job in her book, In Order to Live, A North Korea Girl's Journey to Freedom, of telling her escape from North Korea, how she got to America. And in the book, While Time Remains, she talks about our freedoms, which are so fragile, so easy to be lost. And as I read this book, I thought about our Christian Research Journal, because our latest edition is titled The War on Western Civilization, Everything You Need to Know About the Cult of Wokeism. And Yeonmi Park really talks about wokeism in this book as well. So the two books, and they are absolute must-reads, both books. You can get them through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can go online at equip.org, or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. So again, check out those books on our website at equip.org. For your support of the ministry, happy to send you a copy of either one of those books. But if you've read one, you'll read the other. The title of this book, While Time Remains, Yeonmi, really reminds me of what happened under the Babylonian captivity with the Jews in the 6th century, where Joel likens the invading forces to an army of locusts, and he warns the people of God to turn back to the principles and the precepts of Yahweh while time remains. And of course, they didn't. They ended up in exile. The temple was destroyed and so forth. So, a poignant title, terrific books. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm so honored to be here.
You know, you say so many things that are memorable in your books. The first thing that you say is that you're grateful for two things. You're grateful that you were born in North Korea, and you're grateful that you escaped North Korea. Elaborate.
So I came to New York. When I came to America, I studied. I was trying to study at Columbia University and writing my first book that you were talking about. And I couldn't really believe that how many people were suffering in the land of free and in the land of abundance. Almost 75% of my friends were going to see therapists because they could not handle daily life in freedom. And I was truly shocked. They were asking me to go see a therapist, and I was like, what do you mean that I need to go talk about how hard it was to survive? It was not a concept for me. And that's when I truly realized, without seeing the darkness, you cannot really truly appreciate the light. You can never appreciate freedom the way I could, because I was experiencing such a oppression that I think a lot of people are hard to imagine. And that's when I, for the first time, realized actually what I went through was a part of blessing. It was a greater plan that God made for me. So I could have that perspective and be grateful and really be happy even being in America right now.
You've told this story many times, but give people some kind of sense of what it is like to live in North Korea, not 50 years ago, but even right at this moment?
So I often say that living in North Korea, in a way, is something people cannot really relate to anymore, because it became almost a different planet. People in North Korea have no concept of internet. They don't even have 24 hours electricity. We don't even have a... Actually, my son asking me, I have a son, and he asked me, like, did you have a bed in North Korea? I was like, of course not. Did you have a shower in North Korea? Of course not. Like, he's like, then what did you have? Right? Literally the everything that we have here, the things that we take really for granted. North Korean people have no concept that they even exist. I never even knew that milk was coming from cow. I never had milk in my life. There's no formula. If though you have a child as a mother, and because of malnutrition, women don't make breast milk, then children die. And that's a norm in our country. And I think that kind of life that North Korean people are living is, in a way, in the dark ages. That is a norm there. And I think that's why it's very hard for the Westerners to imagine life in the darkness.
Is it accurate to talk about North Korea as the world's largest concentration camp?
Totally. I mean, now, after Kim Jong-un, the latest Kim that came into power, in the last, even for the last 10 years, with the aid from Chinese Communist Party, they've been exporting all this technology, the surveillance technology, to facial recognition and to put on the border. They built double wire fences with the electricity running. They buried the landmines on their entire border with the machine guns, with the guards standing. The entire nation is scared. And people have no other information coming in. There's a one channel on TV that was government controlled. There's no other newspaper. So it is the largest concentration camp the humanity has ever seen.
You know, North Korea actually has a history that's very, very interesting. I was born in 1950, and the civil war in North Korea broke out in 1950, a civil war that lasted about 3 years. And then you have, along the 38th parallel, you have a line of demarcation between North and South. You have the South Korean peninsula becoming one of the most prosperous areas of the world, number one academically worldwide. If you look at pro golf, I love golf. Some of the greatest golfers come out of Korea, particularly on the LPGA tour. So incredible prosperity, great learning, an incredible culture, really, goes from a military dictatorship to this incredible culture contrasted now with North Korea. But how does this happen where you have a prosperous South Korea and an absolutely decimated, in terms of the people, North Korea?
Yeah, I think it's a great example when we see the night time. We see the satellite pictures of North Korea and South Korea. You see the light in South Korea, and then North Korea is at the black hole, complete darkness, because there's no electricity in there. And this is, I think, perfect testament to see why political system matters. North Korea, South Koreans were same people for almost 5,000 years. Same genetics, same culture, same language. We ate same kimchi and all of the same food. And then we chose a two different political system. One chose collectives, communism and socialism. One chose free market, the American system of government with checks and balances and free democracy. With the two political system, one country became the one of the poorest nations in the whole world. And people are dying massively from starvation. They cannot even have basic medicine. And one country, that is South Korea, became the country of K-pop. I mean, the artists, the electronics, Samsung, LG, Hyundai, they make cars. They make so many great products for humanity. And I think this is where it really comes down to what political system that we choose determines our future. In a way, it's not about genetics. It's not about culture. It's really not about any of that. If this political system enables individuals to fulfill their potential, and that is what we're seeing in South Korea, and that's how they became like 10 largest economies in the world as a nation with a tiny, tiny country. South Korea as a whole is not even a, every state in America is bigger than South Korea. That's how tiny it is and became the 10th largest economy in the whole world. So is that something why we need to choose free democracy, why we choose to have capitalism and democracy, and that's how humans can really fulfill their dreams.
You tell a gripping story of having your appendix removed in North Korea. And I think in telling that story on this podcast, I think people will get some kind of an idea of what it's like to be in a hospital. We take hospital services for granted, certainly where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and throughout the United States. We take so much for granted. But you have your appendix removed, and you start to see the total degradation of a system where medicine actually becomes harmful to a person because the needles are reused, because the dead bodies are stacked up like cordwood. Give us some kind of a glimpse into what it was like for you personally to have what we would think of as a simple operation.
Yeah, I think it's a really good example where people to get seen in reality what this promise does to people. So in America now, I see this trend too. So many people saying education is a human right. We should get a free education, right? Free higher education. Healthcare is a human right. We should get a free healthcare. And that exact promise were promised to North Korean people by Kim Il-sung in North Korea. The regime came in the 50s and promised people, we're going to make the housing free. We're going to make the education free. We're going to make the healthcare free. But in that free healthcare, nothing works. And it does so much harm to the Northern people. So when I went to, I got a huge bad stomach ache in 2007 when I was 13 years old. My mother took me to hospital. And then in the hospital, they don't have like CT scans or X-ray machines or anything. Just doctor rubs your belly. And he was thinking you might have like appendicitis. In my purse, we might have to operate on you. And then this doctor will not do anything if we don't bribe the doctor. So first, it's not free. You have to bribe a doctor. Then they don't have anything like penicillin or like any cautery. So my mother had to borrow money and go to black market, buy this like medicine and gauze and things from the black market. And then once doctor opened my stomach without really working anesthesia, and he realized I just had a malnutrition and infection. I didn't have appendicitis. And they still removed it and then closed me back. But people in North Korea don't die from cancer. They literally die from fever, infection, like this mistreatment, because doctors in hospital use one needle to inject every patient. And they can't afford to buy this new gauze. So they will sometimes cook it and try to kill the germs, and sometimes it doesn't work. So this is like what free healthcare looks like in reality. It's not that all that amazing, promising, what, you know, Americans are envisioning to be. That's what in reality, how it works.
Tell us about Juche.
So this is really going back to what I just talked about, why this doctor needed a bribery. So Juche is where the idea that North Korea made up in the middle of the socialism. So they began as a communist party, and then, okay, we are going to choose a socialism. Then they later said, okay, we need to have to come up with something else. And that was a North Korean style of socialism. So until like Soviet Union collapses, Soviet Union was heavily, heavily subsidizing North Korea's economy. And then when Soviet Union stopped supporting North Korea, the regime just ran out of all the resources. So they could not tell people anymore that the state gonna take care of you, right? Initially they said, state is going to give you free housing, free healthcare, free education, free of everything, eliminate all the inequalities, make the society totally equitable. But then they could not keep their promise. So they said, okay, now we are on your own. We are not going to take care of you, but you cannot be trading in the black market, or you cannot have any private sector. You cannot own any private property. So doctors had to work for the government for free, but they could not get salary. So the only place they can get a food to survive themselves was getting bribery. So it forced everybody in North Korea to become corrupt. So children had to go to school. Officially, it's a free education, but teachers are dying from starvation. school cannot run. Nothing was applied by government. So they would like hit students, torture students to go home and bring money and bring supplies to school to teachers. So if you don't bring bribery to school, your children get abused and get beaten at school. So it really made everybody in society, the guards had to rape these women because they have all the authority. The governments cannot intervene. So it became something called self-reliance. It meant that we are on our own and we could not do any something called the free market and engaging in a free trade.
You know, what you're really describing is a cult. And I'm wondering what keeps the Kim family dynasty, the Kim cult, in charge? I mean, how can they maintain control of 26 million people in these conditions? I mean, are they facilitated?
So many factors work in order for this to maintain, right? Keep the status quo. First is the political support they get from China. China's support has been most important factor for the regime to survive. They've been providing the oil, all the materials the North Korea needs to build the nukes and be antagonistic to South Korea, Japan, and America. So that Chinese support is there. The second support is coming from the North Korean ruling elite. North Korean regime divided people into 51 different castes. The same people, same genetics, but they divided people into 51 classes. And that's the dictator's handbook. You divide and rule. When you separate people, when you separate families, people are vulnerable. You cannot rely on each other. So people are against each other in North Korea. And then on top of all this suffering, there's one top elite that is ruling the nation. So they are supporting this regime. They have every reason, every right, and every intention to maintain Kim Jong-un's status quo so they can be the royalty in the 21st century. And another thing they use is a fear. They do not accept any like resistance. There's no such a thing called a dissent in North Korea. You hear the dissent in Cuba, Iran, China, other countries, but there's no way you can be a dissident in North Korea because as soon as you do go against the regime, they kill up to 3 to 8 generations. The first thing that my mother told him as a young girl was, don't even whisper because the birds and mice could hear me. And if I said one wrong word, it was not going to just scare me. It was going to kill up to 3 to 8 generations of my family. So that zero tolerance rule keeps everybody afraid and they cannot fight back because the revenges from the regime is brutal. It's not something we ever see in any other nation before. And I think these forces helping regime to continue, and it will probably continue as long as the free world continues to silence about this crisis.
Yeonbi, you gave a speech in Dublin, Ireland, and some 1 billion people, I mean, that's an astounding number, 1 billion people globally have seen that speech. And as a result of that, you have a pretty significant level of fame and fortune. You could luxuriate in that fame and fortune, and yet you have put yourself on the firing line by criticizing China, by criticizing the dictatorship in North Korea. Why would you do that? You escape from North Korea via China. You experience sexual slavery. You cross the Gobi Desert into Mongolia, transported from Mongolia to South Korea. Then you become an American citizen. You go through all of the hell that you went through in your life. I think you're 30 years old now. You're a young woman. You've written bestsellers. You're known by the elite of America. And yet you have chosen a hard path. Why?
When you survive something like that, so there are only 209 of us made it to America over the last 80 years.
Say that number again.
Yeah, 209.
Only 209.
Made it to America over the last 80 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so you do have some kind of survivor's guilt. Because I know truly in my heart that I didn't get this lucky because I was somehow fought harder than other people. I got simply lucky or I got chosen. And I think that it comes with the responsibility. World has no clue what's happening in North Korea. They have no clue what's happening to Northern women in China. They don't know the North Korean girls' organs are harvested out of them in the 21st century. They don't know that my mother, like people like me, were sold for $65 or $20 in the 21st century. In the 21st century, people have no clue that slavery never ended. It's been continuing and the numbers has been growing than ever before. So I think it came with that responsibility. And I guess it's one way for me to cope with my survivor scare, that by being the voice for this voiceless people, I do feel less guilty. And it's the only right thing to do. I remember when I was crossing the desert, the biggest fear that I felt was not even dying. The fact that nobody knew that I existed, that nobody knew the struggles that North Korean people going through. If I died in that desert that night, nobody would have known what any of this happened to North Korean people. To 26 millions of people are going through these nightmares. And because I got out somehow with luck or with somehow supernatural power or helping me, I got this position. So I could not be silenced again when I was seeing this rise of authoritarianism in America that disguised in the name of compassion, name of equity, equality of outcomes, the same promise that Kim Il-sung promised to people is being believed by the American people, especially by the American young college-educated people, believing that somehow the paradise is possible on Earth, that utopia is like possible, that we can achieve that dream of where nobody is suffering, nobody is unequal, we can be all the same. That deadly promise is happening in America, and I cannot see this time again that seeing America that I love becoming like North Korea.
I was diagnosed with stage 4 mantle cell lymphoma, a very serious form of cancer, in 2017, and I survived that through a transplant in 2019. And sometimes I tell people I feel like I'm living on borrowed time. And when I read your book, that was one of the phrases that caught my attention. You point out that you feel like you're living on borrowed time. Now, I'm 73 years old. I guess it's impolite to say your age, but you say it in your book. So you're about 30 years of age. You're a young, beautiful woman. You're a mother. And you say you're living on borrowed time. Explain that.
I mean, as I said, the number indicates completely, you know, that only 29 of us made it here. It's in a way, after you, when you get this lucky, and mathematically it makes no sense. And I'm like not even 80 pounds with a 1 percentile of, you know, strength in body and make this far. It is a bonus life at this point. It's not something that I earned. It was given by greater force that I get to enjoy or I was given to. So I try to make that count and make that meaningful in any way I can. And in a way also that I've been on a killing list of Kim Jong-un for a while. I've been informed by South Korean intelligence a long time ago that I was just on his killing list. So I can be killed any day, any second, anywhere I go if he decides, because the most powerful dictator is going against me. There's no way, no intelligence can stop that assassination if Kim Jong-un wants to do it. Like he killed his own half-brother in Malaysia in the international airport. There's nothing this dictator wouldn't do. He doesn't care about the human rights or international shame. He has no shame in him. So for me, it's that every day is a blessing that I cannot take it for granted.
You tell a remarkable story of being at Columbia University. This is a university that's older than the United States of America that we know of.
Yeah.
And yet, when you went to orientation day, I think you almost had deja vu of being back in North Korea.
Completely. It was unbelievable. I could not believe in the center of the world, that is New York City, in one of these amazing Ivy League schools with a great reputation I go to, and seeing the indoctrination that was happening, this complete just pure propaganda that was pumping out the students, really. They are saying that all the evils of the world, all the problems in the world is because of the white man. They are the source of every evil that we have in the world. The only solution for us to solve all these problems, to solve all these injustices in the world, is by destroying America, by destroying the Constitution. And we build this nation in the name of equity, which is collectivism and socialism. And this was being taught in one of the most elite schools in the whole world, really. And that's when I was realizing that, after all, America was not on the right path. It was, you know, horribly in the wrong path that we are choosing to go. And I was really even wondering how many people even know this. And no wonder these kids graduating from Colombia become the higher position in the society. They become the former president. They become the ones to running the big tech companies, big banks, or any big institution. And they believe this authoritarian mindset where if somebody disagrees with you, you have every right to silence them. And that is happening all around America now. And especially during the pandemic, I saw that from my first eyes. And we don't have that much time left in this country to turn this back.
Yeah, while time remains, we don't have that much time. I mean, these kinds of revolutions, which have been taking place gradually in the environmental industry, in the educational industry, in the entertainment industry, these kinds of revolutions, they seem to be very gradual. And we may look at it as Americans and say, well, we still have a lot of time. I mean, a lot's going wrong, but, you know, we've got time. But when you look at some of the revolutions, like the French Revolution or the Bolshevik Revolution, suddenly you have catastrophe. And so you're warning people, freedom is fragile. Be aware. Be involved. You can't do a whole lot about what's going on in the totality of American government, but you can be involved on a local level. You can be involved in making a difference, to use your title, while time remains.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I convey in my new book. It's about how to really recognize the threat that is posing to our liberty, but also what to do about it. Changing the world does not begin with, you know, the greatest war that we can begin. It really starts from self-government. You know, you start from being at home, establishing your family, you taking care of your community, and you go out in the local governments and vote and saying your opinions in your company or at school anywhere. So it really not being fearful. The reason that I wrote that book is that people think that somehow revolution only can happen when everybody in the society agrees. But in the human history, if you look at, it's only in the hot spots. It's like even Kim Il-sung, when he came, there are plenty of people did not approve what he was doing. But he was attracting these hot spots of institutions that would support him. And right now, look at us. The Hollywood is completely embedded with China, with the work corporations, with all these big tech companies, even so much American, like even FBI, I was canceled by FBI. I couldn't believe it. This is a government agency dedicated to protect American citizens. And because of that, I did not believe that man can be a woman. They said they cannot have me and telling them about what to do about North Korea. So while I was writing this book, I was invited to speak at FBI and talk about the harrowing journeys that North Korean women go through in China to become free. And then, like literally 2 days before my speech, the head of diversity calls me and saying, because of my political views, they cannot have me as a speaker. They had to cancel the event. And that same year that I became American citizen, and in my American citizenship, an interviewer asked me, have you ever persecuted anybody for their political opinion? If you have, you know that you cannot become American. You cannot persecute somebody for their political opinion. That is a very not American thing to do. People have no clue what it means to be American are running America. And that's why America is not the same America anymore. So really, I think us to finding that the original principles, what was the basic principles of this country, and reading what our founding fathers intended to become a free person and free nation that lets people be free from the government's tyranny, I think that's a really first step for us to understand and go back to the first principles and stop being on TikTok and social media.
Wow. So you're saying that if you are on social media, if you watch the news cycle all the time, you're probably not going to get a true valuation of things. And one of the things I love about you is that you are a learning machine. You actually got that nickname in South Korea. One year, I don't know what year it was or if you do this every year, but this is a woman after my own heart. I mean, you said you read 100 books, and I'm constantly telling people to read. Maybe from your perspective, you can put an exclamation point on how important it is to be a learning machine, to read and not be obsessed with the narratives that you hear in the popular media.
Yeah, it's a very tempting thing, you know, when you read a few words on Twitter or even Instagram, and there's no even words on Instagram. I don't use TikTok personally, but even going on TikTok, it really changes your brain chemicals that you cannot really pay attention that much. It doesn't engage your brain. You're just passively receiving this information that is made by somebody who was very not educated a lot of times. And I think this is why America is losing in this competition with the Asia that we are talking about in South Korea, right? Like the greatest knowledge was in classical books that built this nation, that we can go back to reading The Law by Bastiat. We can read so many amazing books like On Liberty by John Stuart Mill or, you know, 1984. There are so many amazing books to explain how the authoritarianism works, what it means to be a free person, what it means to live in a free country, understanding the threat of even a majority, how majority can be wrong a lot of times and can choose a tyranny, come to that country. People don't understand this. And then there's like, oh, as long as more people want it, that's a great thing. Like, how do you know that's a good thing? And so many times, when you get into this groupthink, people make bad, horrible decisions. Every single time when we join this groupthink, it produces death of millions of poor humanity. So I think for us to really going back to those classical books to understand our nature, human nature, the political structure that we are living in, and the past histories. And I think that is the only way to us to overcome the noise that is making by the Hollywood and TikTok and social media that is not doing any good to anybody. Really, children getting affected, and even adults, we are getting more oppressed, I mean, depressed and isolated from each other. And it's like, as a parent, I'm like, there's no way my child is going to ever get on social media. As long as this child is under my roof, that will never happen.
So are you going to make sure he doesn't get a phone?
I think eventually he needs to get a smartphone, but it's going to be heavily monitored and child locked. And when he gets home, it's getting locked. I'm never going to let him have his phone in his own room by himself.
Good for you. So now you tell this humorous story in your book under a title, Hypocrisy of the Elite. So you get this call from a guy named Jeff Bezos. You have no idea who this guy is, and you say, well, I'm too busy. You interact with Hillary Clinton, with Jon Stewart, with Meryl Streep, and the list goes on. You are in full view of the elite of America, and yet you have come to the conclusion that dealing with the elite, with the power brokers in America, is not the solution. Why?
So when I came to America, I did not come with any concept of what the Democrat Party or conservative, or I had no biases whatsoever. I just came with an open heart. And initially, I did genuinely believe these people saying publicly saying they denounce slavery, especially Hillary Clinton. How many she talks about the women's empowerment, you know, how she thinks she's so passionate about bringing girls up and championing for women's rights. I believed all that. I read her memoir. I think you can read it in my first book. I was reading Oprah Winfrey. I was reading the Hillary Clinton's memoir, and I was reading the Obama's memoir. I was reading all these books and got so inspired. I came to America. And then by some fortune, I had a luck to meet these people in private and talk to them. So I had a great hope that if I really tell them what is happening to North Korean women, there are 300,000 North Korean women right now in China are trapped. They get raped, they get killed, their organs are harvested out of them. And there is no, there's hardly lying about it. Everybody's keeping silence about it. And if I told these people what was happening, I thought they are going to go stand up for the women's rights. But when I actually told them about this crisis, all they did was like, please don't tell people that you know me, because they do not want to be associated to somebody who is exploding Chinese Communist Party. They were the complete hypocrites. They are the cowards. They were so corrupt, just like North Korean elites. But they were just disguising themselves in this great, amazing social justice terms, all about, oh, slavery is wrong. We need to end the discrimination. But when there's actual slavery happening, they do not take a stand. And that's when I understood, oh, this is all play they are doing to gain more power, to gain more money, and get elected in a higher positions in the government and selling more products on Amazon company. And this is a strategy that they are using to become rich themselves. It wasn't they are saying it because they actually cared about these issues. And that's when I got disillusioned and stopped really meeting these people, because they are just liars.
I want you to do a contrast for the audience. I've heard you do this before, and I think it's very helpful. The difference between crony capitalism and what I believe, you believe in capitalism, I believe in Christian capitalism, which means responsibility associated with wealth. But contrast capitalism as you see it, as the engine that has lifted so many millions out of poverty, that has enhanced the world in so many dynamic ways, and then crony capitalism, which you sort of have already hinted at.
Yeah, I think the example that I can see is that there's nothing wrong about creating wealth and creating profit. In North Korea, the word profit is banned because they shame profit. They think somehow profit is bad. But by enriching other people's lives and you make money, that's a completely good thing. That I see virtue in profit. If you don't like creating a drug and killing people and indoctrinating children, that's, it's a good thing as long as you don't do that. But now what I see is that this crony capitalist is in bed with the government officials, with the corrupt. They don't compete fairly anymore. Like, as you can see, even this Hunter Biden investigation, that is a perfect example of crony capitalism. They go bribe the son of the vice president and telling them of a project in China they want to do in America. They want to make money. That is really not what initial capitalism was intended. That's really core. I don't even know, like you can say, I guess best term is crony capitalism at this point, but that is not the capitalism that I support personally. The free market that I support is there's no corruption between government officials. There's no intervention. You're just fairly and squarely competing with your pure product, with your pure competence in the marketplace and benefiting other people through a great medicine, great technology, great even safe cars, right? That's a real good thing. Like, we should support the profit. We should support the capitalism. But there's so many new trends that happen in America that is concerning me. With embedding these corrupt politicians, and you are willing to sell your country by a few million dollars, literally. You're willing to sell your nation security for just your personal benefit. And that is not capitalism, for sure.
You're one of the few people that has the courage to speak about China. There's so much pushback when you do. I've spent a lot of time in China over the years, and I've seen a big transition in China. It's happening right now. I mean, you had the horrors under communism. The Black Book of Communists now says not 78 million or 100 million, but maybe 200 million people die as a result of the communist regime, Mao, and so forth. And so you have the horrors of what happened under the Maoist regime, the famines, the Cultural Revolution, so forth. Then you have under Deng Xiaoping, you have a lot of people lifted out of poverty. Now under Xi, you have this authoritarian control again, and you have explained that very eloquently. And I think it's worth it for our listeners to have some concept of what's taking place in China and how we are so beholden to China that we can't really say anything unless we want to lose our livelihood, unless we want to lose our place in the world.
Yeah, this is a thing where I was baffled how much people were not educated on China, the history of China, and what Chinese people went through under Mao. It's a perfect example how absolute power corrupts absolutely. Under Mao, minimum there were more than 50 million people died by this man-made starvation, right? It's a man-made mismanagement and starvation that he killed so many of his own people. And in America, they often just know about Hitler or a Holocaust, but they don't understand the degree of the death that China imposed through their state-governed control. And that trend is happening under Xi Jinping. He changed literally government constitution and made himself eternal leader. And he is a dictator for sure now. He's completely a dictator like Mao. And under him, I think it's China is a complete police state. It's not a humane society that is like some other, our like allies in Japan or like, you know, France or UK. In China, the people really cannot even write a wrong word online. They cannot go to school or go to get a loan or get a job if they don't follow the government's like indoctrination. And so, yeah, North Koreans in a way more impoverished way of police state, but China is also in a way slightly more affluent police state. But the liberty is gone in that land. So when Hollywood, actually, when my first book was going to try to become a movie, and then the Hollywood studio producer sent me a script, and in the script says that China was my promised land. When I got China, I wasn't getting raped at 13 and sold as a human like sex slave. They were protecting me and gave me a safety and refuge. And I asked the producer, like, what are you talking about? Like, this is a complete lie. And said, this is the only way we can make a movie about North Korea in current Hollywood, because they are funding so many American movies. They have to portray as China as a good guys and lying to American people. So I think really like American institutions embedded in China is a sign how they do not stand up for human rights at all. And they how they are not supporting democracy at all. It's an actual thing that we need to expose in America, but you can't because so many powerful people are making money with this deal they are making with China. And they're lying to American people about the threat of China. They are posing to the entire humanity, really.
Something that maybe you can elaborate on as well is why in the world would China facilitate North Korea? What's in it for China?
So there are many reasons, but the main reason is really first, they use a North Korea as a buffer zone. So not, South Korea and North Korea are, right, like one democracy, one is socialism. And there is Japan across that ocean nearby, and then America. So if North Korea collapses and become part of South Korea, at their door, there's American military in it, and also the free democracies in it. So this time, instead of North Koreans looking at China and admiring those lights coming from China, this time, China is going to look at North Korea admiring those free democracies that people enjoy in the free country like America, Japan, and South Korea. And then it can infer that instability that China is having. They have 56 different ethnicities. China is very diverse. And in that, there's Uyghurs, there's Tibetans. There are many groups in China want to be independent. They don't want to be part of China. They were different countries. They were invaded by China, and they are oppressed by China right now. So they could be like fighting for their independence, getting empowered by this, you know, North Korea becoming free. So that is a buffer zone that China does not want to lose. And the second is a leverage tool against America. Whenever America needs to North Korea to stop the nuclear test, stop threatening their allies like Japan, they need to ask Kim Jong-un to do it. But Kim Jong-un does not even pick up the call from Biden. The only person they can talk to and make North Korea to get the message out is through China. China, North Korea listens to China. So it's a great leverage whenever they want to negotiate with America, they can say, okay, we can make North Korea listen to you about this part. So that leverage tool is very important in diplomacy. They keep that. So because of these two main reasons that China will never give up on North Korea unless America puts a humongous like pressure on them. Otherwise, North Korea is a very useful tool for China to maintain as it is and costing them not much that costs either. Like it's not that much money they're spending and getting all this advantage out of North Korea.
You talked about the poverty in North Korea, the oppression, the horrible conditions. And yet, I think it's helpful for people to understand just how powerful North Korea is. It is a nuclear power. It has chemical weapons. It has biological weapons. I mean, people don't understand that this small country, relatively small country, poses an enormous threat to the world. I mean, their standing military, the size of it, I think is the fourth largest in the world. But people have no concept of just how significant they are. On the one hand, impoverished. On the other hand, very powerful.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's so contradictory to Americans. Like if the nation is the fourth largest military in the whole world, why people are starving? People are starving not because the country is poor, because it's easy to control starving people. Because starving people are not going to think about meaning of life and how to make their lives better. Starving people only think that they worry about surviving, looking for next meal, right? So starvation is a tool for Kim Jong-un to control people. That's why North Korea is a tool for. So since Kim Jong-un inherited the throne from his own father, he conducted more than 40-something missile tests. One missile test can feed the entire nation for an entire year. That's how much money it costs. So if he did less four tests during the time, nobody in North Korea had to go starve. But he chose not to do that. So that people poor is nothing to do with the capability of North Korean regime. The military is very strong. They have a capability to reach American mainland to attack with nuclear power. And that capability is going so rapidly. That speed is so fast. Even for the last 2 years after Biden got elected, North Korea's nuclear test is like an everyday thing now. Their capability is so high. What I am concerned is that eventually North Korea is going to become too big to fail. They're too powerful. We might just have to be negotiating North Korea and sitting at the table and listen to what they're saying. Because already we are getting to the point where they're so strong. So if something happens to North Korea, they can just completely annihilate entire 50 million of South Koreans in the South. Right, the human cost is so big. And we are reaching that point where we just have to let North Korea be. And I just don't think that's a good future for humanity to have a dictator having this much power and nothing can hold him accountable.
Nothing can hold them accountable. One of the points you make in your book is that you are very much against leftism. But in the process of talking about what leftism entails, you contrast, and I always say contrast is the conduit to clarity, you contrast leftism with liberalism. Help us understand that.
So leftism is very different from liberalism. I think there are many sensible liberals in America, and that's a great thing. I think the liberals still believe in the limited role of government, for sure. And they believe in that. They believe in free market, basically. They believe in free capitalism. They understand a problem with capitalism is nothing is perfect. They understand there is a limit to capitalism, and they're honest about it, but they are not saying, oh, because of there are some imperfections in capitalism, let's completely dismantle the system and try out the socialism all over again. That was happened 21 times and failed every single time that was tried, right? So liberals are very sensible. They do point out very, very good points about the, you know, problem that caused by capitalism, the inequality, and the gap between inequality is a real thing in America. And there's just so much disparity, what kind of education you can get, what kind of safety that you can get based on your income status. It's nothing to about your skin color. I think America's struggle is not really your skin color issues. It's really based on the income bracket. What neighborhood do you live in? What zip code do you belong to? Based on that zip code, your children's future is very predictable because of what school they're going to go to, what friends they're going to hang out to, you know, what healthcare you're going to receive, all of that. And this is something that we all need to work on and paying attention to. But the leftist ideology is a complete mob ideology. It's a completely a, you know, now it's a gender ideology they're playing. It makes no, based on no real logic or truth. They say math is racist. Math is not real. It's made up by the white man to control minority. Like North Korea, they say 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 1 is, according to Kim Jong-il, is bigger one. Because when you add one drop of water to another drop of water, it becomes bigger one. It does not become two. That kind of logic where, you know, men can give birth. And this kind of the ideology driven by the left, and they are the ones that pushing for cancel culture. They are the one pushing for destroying American Constitution. And that's why I think there's a huge difference between the liberals and the leftists. And I fight against leftism, not the liberalism at all.
How dangerous is critical theory or critical race theory from your perspective?
How can a society prosper when you say that your country is irredeemable? Like, your country is so evil. The only way for this sin to be repented is by destroying all of it. Right? No nation wants to prosper and move forward and inventing new amazing technology medicines gonna teach their own children, hate your country with all your guts. That is just not. And also, not only is hating your own country, like hating freedom, but hating your people. Like, the what CRT preaches is that every white person, especially white heterosexual men, are inherently evil. There's no ending to that evilness. Like in North Korea, if your ancestors were landowners or capitalists or did not support the communism, then your blood is forever tainted. Your genetics is oppressive. That's how North Korea divided people into 51 different classes. But now in America, based on your skin color, people are divided. Who is the biggest victim? Who is the less victim? Based on your skin color. It's nothing about that. Like, now they say my son is a privileged person because he's a half white, half Asian. Doesn't matter that his mother was a sex slave at 13 and sold and escaped from the most oppressed nation in the whole world because of his skin color. He can never understand what oppression means and understand the, you know, real tragedy. So America became in this very black and white binary worldview that is not based on any truth. And that only can create division. And when people are divided, dictators thrive. That is a perfect environment of tyranny to rise. And that's why they're so obsessed in dividing American people. Divide us based on our skin color, divide us based on our political views, and dividing, dividing, dividing. At the end, we have nowhere else to turn other than government.
You tell a gripping story in your book about what happened to you in Chicago on Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
It had a tremendous impact on you. Not only were you physically assaulted, but you see a harbinger of things to come unless something changes.
Yeah, I think that was a really catalyst why I wrote my second book. When I was at Columbia, hearing about this nonsense woke ideology where, you know, men can be women, women can be men, white men are like the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity, and the Western civilization is the evil of all. And I thought, like, okay, these kids graduate from university, go into real world, start paying taxes and have their own family, they're gonna understand how the world works. So that was at least a little hope that I held on to when I was at college. When I got out, and during the pandemic, the first year, I was walking down the Mission Avenue during the bright daylight around like 2 or 4 p.m. afternoon with my son. I was robbed by a few Black women. And nothing too wrong with Black women robbed me because I was raped by Asian men. It's not about anything about skin color. Anybody can be a murderer. Anybody can be a thief. It was not about skin color thing. And I was, because I was being robbed by these few Black women, and I was trying to call the police for help. And people on the street were circling around me and yelling at me that I'm a racist because I was trying to call the police on these thieves. And they say, I'm a racist. And that's when I really witnessed this madness of crowd. How Americans are collectively gone mad. They cannot see any truth anymore. Only thing they could see was a skin color at the moment. That I'm a, they thought a privileged Asian woman being robbed in front of a 2-year-old toddler is not a thing that I deserve to be held. Because these women were perpetrating that crime on me, were black women, they deserved all the help. And that's when I realized, oh wow, we are really, really far down in this like world of this groupthink, that people cannot think for themselves anymore. And when we cannot stop thinking for ourselves, that's when Mao happens, when Stalin happens, when Kim Il-sung happens.
And it can happen. I mean, I heard Elon Musk in an interview not long ago talk about the fact that human beings have a life cycle and civilizations mm-hmm. have a life cycle. And when you think about that in pragmatic terms, sometimes it makes me wonder, are we too far at the edge now of the precipice to turn back? Do you see hope?
I see hope. Yeah, the Roman Empire lasted for them more than 500 years. There were many empires that lasted longer than American Empire. I don't even use even empires, like American civilization, the Western civilization. I think in a way that is a, to me, is what is the alternative if we let America go? This is the last hope for humanity. This is the greatest hope for humanity. What is the alternative? Are we going to choose or become like China, right? That is no alternative that we can choose from. And in a way also, the humanity is connected more than ever. We have internet. We have so many great technology, unlike before. We have so many new tools. In a way, of course, dictators have a lot of tools to control people, but also we have a lot of tools to resist that threat that is posed by dictators. And I really truly believe as long as Americans keep the right to have the guns in their home to protect their private property and their liberty, I really don't think that we can ever truly become like North Korea and China to that degree. The first thing that in Cambodia, the genocide happened, the first thing they did was confiscating all the guns. That happened in North Korea, that happened in China. Whenever people lose their guns, that really full tyranny can happen. But as long as America keeps the constitution, and especially the guns, I really don't think that we are going to allow government officials take drag 3-generation families out and execute them. Because before you die, you're going to like shoot them back. You're going to fight somehow. It's just a very dangerous game that you are playing with your own citizens when they have the right to protect themselves. And some people say, how do you compete with a government that has a nuke? They cannot nuke their own entire country. Who are they going to like, you know, enslave afterwards? Who are they going to rule afterwards? No government is saying going to nuke everybody in their nation, right? So I think because governments have nukes, that doesn't mean that the guns are meaningless. Guns are still very powerful equalizer that we need to hold on to if we really want to protect our livelihoods and our liberty here.
But from another perspective, how do you break the iron grip that China has on America? I mean, if you look at someone like Jeff Bezos and Amazon, mm-hmm. you realize that he can't really say anything negative about China. The movie industry can't really say anything negative about China, because if you do, your profits are going to evaporate. You're going to suddenly be in a very difficult position. So people have to continue, or at least want to continue, facilitating China. And China literally is now controlling in many aspects American industry and American culture. I mean, you mentioned you're not on TikTok. Well, yeah. I mean, you don't be controlled by the very country that facilitated your rape.
Yeah, even these Ivy League schools, they get so much funding from China. They cannot talk anything negative of China in this college even campuses, right? So the threat from China, the control from China is real. But the great thing that we still have in America is we live in a free democracy. We still have freedom of speech. So first thing that we need to do is us educating ourselves about China and the threat that it's posing. And secondly, talk about it, raise awareness about Chinese threat. The third, we gotta elect the politicians that recognize this threat, that want to stand up for this bully and fighting for American interests. So I think in a way, we still have so many tools left. We can go learn. We can buy books reading about China. Second, we can talk to our family members, our children, our community, go to church and talk about that. And third, we can elect the politicians that share our vision and why that we need to resist Chinese threat in this country. Then I think there's so many steps us to do before we lose our hope. And I'm always excited every day, like how much we can do in America right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a powerful word of encouragement. I've often said that the ballot box is necessary, but it's not sufficient. And as you have explained mm-hmm. earlier on, there are so many things we need to do at a grassroots level. And a lot of it involves parenting, as you're yeah. talking about with respect to the phone. I see kids going off to school. They're not looking at one another. They're not bouncing a ball. They're simply glued to their phones, and they are being the recipients of propaganda.
Yeah. Children is our future. There's no denying that. They are the ones going to lead the next generation. And as a parent, as an adult, if we fail to transfer the knowledge that we know about the world, I think that is, like, to me, the biggest responsibility that adults or the parents have. Really letting them know that what we understand about the world so they can go further and finding new truth and new things after that, right? But now we are failing in educating our children. American children suffering from, they cannot even read. Their reading comprehension skill is so low. They cannot even do basic math. They cannot compute any, you cannot do math. You cannot really create any new things. So really focusing on real education. Stop telling them about this like woke stuff, like telling them actual physics and chemistry and biology, the real biology for sure, and reading on comprehension and teaching them about these classical ideas, the books, that how can it can expand our minds. There is so much more in life than just the smartphone in their pocket, right? So that principle that we need to live by as a parent. So many American adults also addicted to smartphone and do not know how to self-regulate their time on social media. And so I think that that should be the first step. And then also not only just voting, but when we even buy products. That's why I love capitalism. In capitalism, you vote by purchasing, like what you buy, right? When you really truly do not support certain things, don't buy things from China. Support the business that was made in America. There are so many great new businesses arriving in America that might be a bit more costly, but because it's more humane, they you know, respect human rights along the way making their products. So we can be more conscious about what we buy, what we consume in this free market system. And that our, what we buy, what we promote, gonna influence the producers, and they're gonna try to do, you know, follow our vision. And that's how we can gradually change our future.
And you're a personification of that, because a lot of people probably don't understand that you had no education. You had no access to education. You get to South Korea and you have the opportunity to learn, and you become this learning machine. And now you are someone that has a great deal of insight on geopolitical realities. But that has not come by watching soap operas or you know, engaging in pat and dribble, but rather through reading, through educating yourself, the power of reading. And I often tell people on this podcast, on our broadcast, through our outlets, that you really don't read a book unless you've read it a few times.
Yeah.
I repeat this often. I mean, I read any book that I'm really interested in, including yours. I read three times.
Oh.
The first time I read it quickly. The second time I read it with a pentel, you know, underlining. And the third time with a marker or with a underliner like this. Then I feel like I own the material and I have the right to do a podcast with you, because I've really taken the time to understand your perspective. So you are the personification of someone that has taken the time to learn. And I think that you can encourage people through your example to do what you've done. And there's something that you said. You were, and you say you still are, amazed at how quickly a lie loses its power in the face of truth.
Yeah. It's in my, all my life, in North Korea, I was brainwashed to believe that Americans were cold-blooded reptiles. They were these monsters that were trying to torture, rape our women. And I was in fear when I was living in North Korea. I was literally sometimes, some nights I was going to bed, I was in fear that what if Americans come and invade us and kill our children and torture us, right? That kind of brainwashing, all my life I believed that. And when I came to America, the very first day at the airport, at the Houston airport, that lie just vanished. When I looked at this man in his hoodies eating some chips at the airport with a big, gigantic smile, I was like, this is not some cold-blooded reptiles. You know, these are people with humanity, with compassion. And that's the thing, like when people are afraid, like what are going to do with the 25 million people in North Korea who are completely brainwashed to believe that Americans are evil? You don't need to worry about that. You just, they come see this. Or just a picture of an American supermarket. They are not going to believe anything that region for them. So I think we should not fear the lies. And I think truth has so much power. And we need to fight for truth. Because when society loses truth, it becomes like North Korea. And when there is a truth, it's there. I think that's how we can have hope.
I admire you so much for so many reasons. One of the chapters in your book is The Terror of Cancel Culture, and you've experienced what it is like to be canceled. Samsung canceled you because of your views on China. You've done videos that are extraordinarily popular, and yet you've been shadow banned. You've been the object of the cancel culture in America, but yet you persist. Give us some sense of how we can do that as well. How we can stand for truth no matter the cost.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that was not even a begin what I gone through. Actually, recently, I don't know if you have seen how the New York Times and Washington Post wrote a hit piece on me. I did not understand how Washington Post could be a mouthpiece for the Northern regime. They interviewed all these people who were supporting Northern regime, the state. And they made them to criticize me and saying the things that the Northern regime says about me. That how American media is so utterly hopeless that they became the mouthpiece for the North Korean dictatorship. That's how bad we've gone to in this path. But I think this is where it came to me. When I came to America, a lot of people who read about North Korea, they were fascinated. And then the question they were asking me was, so why there is no revolution in North Korea? Like, are they all dumb? Like, why do they not fight to be free? And that really made me think, because we got to a point in North Korea that we don't know even we are slaves. Like, and if you don't know you're a slave, how do you fight to be free? And that is the beginning of cancel culture. What I worry about cancel culture is not just being canceled. They eventually cancel you to the point they don't even know how to criticize. They don't even know how to fight back. The first step of cancel culture is, of course, eliminating your voice and your perspective in the public. But second step is people don't hear these alternative views. Eventually, they don't even know what oppression is. They don't even know what slavery is. When you get to that point, you are completely helpless like North Koreans because you don't know that you are oppressed. And I mean, that's why the intention of the cancel culture is not just eliminating somebody's voice and destroying their livelihood, but they eventually want to get rid of that entire perspective and view so people don't know even how to fight back. And that is something called the dictatorship of the mind that North Korea uses and the Nazi used. There are two types of dictatorships in the world. And one, people understand the physical dictatorship. There's no freedom of movement. Right? There's no freedom of speech. There's no freedom to marry other people. Like there's so many physically you cannot do. But in a true dictatorship, there's two different types. That is called emotional dictatorship, that you are not even free to think. You don't even know how to think. And that dictatorship minds only come from this kind of indoctrination at schools. That we don't know even this is a brainwashing. There's so many kids at Columbia don't know that's an indoctrination. They say, oh, math is racist. They believe that. They don't know that's a brainwashing. And then they come out in the society later. They don't think that they were brainwashed. And that's a real danger in that, when they don't understand how they're indoctrinated at school.
I want to start to bring this podcast to a close, although I could talk to you for forever, but I don't want to leave this podcast without you talking about your mother and maybe your sister as well. But one of the things that really struck me about your book is you say that your mother to this day is the happiest person I know. And there's a context here because when you were trafficked in China, your mother took a rape for you. Your mother endured some of the most grotesque circumstances anyone could imagine. And yet, you say, my mother to this day is the happiest person I know. And there's a quote in your book by your mother where she says, when I was asked what happiness is, I asked God, and he told me that happiness is essentially synonymous with gratitude. You and your mother, and I imagine your sister as well, your older sister, you're living lives of gratitude. Talk about how happiness can equate to gratitude. And that's an important principle for all of us to understand and know you can be grateful for the little things in life.
Yeah, as for example, is that one day I went to South Korea to see my family, and my mom would be like literally laughing. So happy laughter coming out of her. I was like, what's so funny? Why are you laughing? It's like, do you hear this refrigerator running right now? That sound of refrigerator running, that she lives in a country where she's so abundant that she has a refrigerator that is running with electricity. That makes her that happy. And in North Korea, I remember if the when we get to see electric light in our light bulb once, we would be all standing and clapping for it because it was such a biggest joy in our lives. And I think that's what she taught me later years, that, you know, like she prayed and she asked God for happiness. Like, how can I be happy, God? Like, give me happiness. And he said, learn gratitude. And people somehow think in America understand happiness is like getting everything that you want, getting all the nice houses, all the things, everything you want, then you can be happy. But happiness is just learning gratitude, gratitude to even be alive today. There are so many people fight for one more day to be alive, to one more day to breathe on earth. And even that fact, if you cannot be grateful for, how can you ever be happy? So that's why I try to teach my son, like every day, before we eat, we pray, obviously. And for the things that just we are just grateful to be alive. We are grateful to just have each other, have this, you know, a burger in front of us, everything that we have. And if you start life from there in the place of gratitude, life can be so beautiful. It's not as horrible, miserable. And when you look at this leftist in their eyes, they are actually suffering. They're so brainwashed to the point that they think the world is falling apart. Everything is going against them. And this is like, I feel compassion for these people. Somebody did that to them, right? They told them this alarmist view somehow, the paranoia they fear, that everything is against them. Everything is horrible. Everything is so bad. They're in this state of urgent paranoia. And that is a place not you want to be. And there's so much good and beauty in life. I hope as an activist myself, people say, how do you not get depressed? You're fighting for talking about rape and slavery, contentious and all day long. But I'm in general a very happy person. I laugh a lot because there's so much other things that is in the world that we need to focusing on too.
Yeah, another famous quote that you have in your book, and I think it's a good place to start ending this podcast, is hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. And weak men then produce hard times.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one that Joe Rogan told me when I was being interviewed on his podcast. And I thought that was very insightful quote, that because our founding fathers and the generation of the world wars created good times for us, they were the strong rock that built this nation out of that devastating world wars that we lost so many people, and they created this amazing, vibrant country. in free market system where individuals have never had this much of abundance, that nobody in America, most of people never had to worry about finding next meal. And with that much opportunity and abundance that given to us, all that we learned is complaining and being bitterness. So now we are creating hard time for the next generations to come, that our national border is not secure. We lost identity as a nation. We don't even know who we are anymore, right? And I think that's why I feel bad for the next generation. That's why I really want to do my portion so I can be proud to my son that you should carry on this fight. And hopefully they're going to create a better future and people going to be understanding what the world will be better than we did.
Well, Yomi Park, you are amazing. You are interesting. You're informative. And I will tell you, you are absolutely inspirational, which is really the mission statement for our podcast. So you fit it to a T, and you're an incredible writer. Aww. Both books, I mean, this book, I started on a trip from Dallas. By the time I landed in Charlotte, I had finished the book. It is gripping. It is gripping. It is an absolute must read. Again, you can get it on the web at equip.org. You can write us at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Your book, While Time Remains, is another one of those books that I didn't read once or twice. I read three times. It's an important book, and I urge everyone to get this book. Again, go to the web at equip.org. It's the easy way, or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. I hope we have another chance to do this sometime. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you today, and I know that you have informed a lot of people about very crucial issues. I mean, quintessential issues for our culture. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a real honor, sir.
Blessings to you.
And thank you so much.
you are so welcome, Yomi. I'm so glad we were able to do the podcast.
Oh.
Best wishes to you and your son. Hope to meet you sometime in person.
I would love that. Please let me know if you're ever in New York.
I go to New York all the time, so.
Oh, that's perfect. Let's get lunch or tea or something.
we'll have to do that. But bless you. And thank you for being on the podcast. I mean, you're just simply amazing.
Oh, thank you. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
And again, I don't know if you were as blessed as I was by this podcast. It's the evidence of what reading can do. As we talked about during the podcast, Yomi Park had little or no education before she escaped from North Korea to China, experienced sexual slavery there, cross a frozen Gobi Desert into Mongolia, gets transported to South Korea, and then starts her education and has become such a source of wisdom on a variety of levels. So she's an inspiration, and particularly with respect to what we do at the Krishna Research Institute, we are so committed to reading, to memorizing, to learning not narratives, but how to think. Because as Yomi Park said, when you learn to think, then you quickly understand the difference between the truth and error, between that which is false and that which stands up to scrutiny, which of course is precisely what the Christian worldview does. It is based on history and evidence. It is not a blind leap into a dark chasm. It is faith founded on a refutable fact. Well, I could go on, but simply want to end this podcast by saying, please rate and review the podcast. It really helps a lot. So if you enjoy the podcast, rate and review. It is an incredible benefit as this podcast reaches more and more people on a worldwide basis. Well, thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Look forward to seeing you next time with more.